All right, good. I have the recorder running now. So hello, everyone. it's good to be here with you on this Easter evening. This is, of course, the first time that I'm going to be teaching the Guiding Light and the Sunday night slot instead of the Seven Steps to Awakening. If you haven't heard, I have let go of the Seven Steps to Awakening for now. It's possible I may pick it up later at some point, but for right now, I have let it go. And I'm doing the Guiding Light during this time frame. And the Guiding Light, if for those of you who don't know, the Guiding Light is really inspired book study with Regina Don Akers. And the first book that I did with the Guiding Light was the Book of John from the Bible. The second book that I did with the Guiding Light was NTI 1 Corinthians. And now I'm in my third book, and tonight's my 34th week with this book. It's the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. But fortunately, I'm beginning a new section. So it's kind of a nice new fresh start for this new time slot. So if you happen to have the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi and you enjoy reading along, tonight I'm starting the section called Attainment. And that begins on page 34. But before I do that, I always like to play a song. So the song that I have picked out tonight is by Denise Hagen, and it's called I Am Everything.
I saw you on the street today, and you tried so hard to hide. I was lying at your feet today. So easy.
A gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous song. All right. So, as I mentioned, I am here to share from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and I am beginning on page 34 in the section called Attainment. And for those of you who are new to the Guiding Light or new to this book, it's a book of questions and answers. The answers come from Ramana Maharshi, and his answers can be quite deep. And so we often read the answer and go, huh? And then kind of go back and take it a sentence at a time. So if I read Ramana's answer and you don't understand a word of what he says, just know that we have that experience a lot when we're reading this book. It's not you. All right. So here's the first question in the section called Attainment. What is the state of attainment of knowledge? And Ramana Maharshi answers, it is firm and effortless abidance in the self, in which the mind, which has become one with the self, does not subsequently emerge again at any time. That is, just as everyone usually and naturally has the idea. Okay, this is like an April Fool's joke here. Listen to this. Tell me, he says, just as everyone usually and naturally has the idea. Tell me if this idea crosses your mind on a daily basis. Are you ready? Just as everyone usually and naturally has the idea, I am not a goat. Nor a cow, nor any other animal, but a man, when he thinks of his body. So also, when he has the idea, I am not the principles beginning with the body and ending with the sound, but the self, which is existence, consciousness, and bliss, the innate self-consciousness, he is said to have attained firm knowledge. Now that is two sentences. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and a half lines in two sentences. And this is the way Ramana Maharshi's answers typically are. They're very, very long sentences with lots and lots of thoughts within one sentence, which is why we then go back and we look at the answer a lot more slowly. And so we will begin that process right now. Also, since this is a new time frame and some of you may be new to the Guiding Light, I will, in my interpretation of his answer, I will refer back to previous weeks where we've been studying this same book and talk about things that we've already seen from Ramana Maharshi's previous answers. So again, the question is, what is the state of attainment of knowledge? What is the state of attainment of knowledge? And I believe today, was it today, that you all had the tip from NTI that defined knowledge? Let me double check that. Let's see. Yes, Kathy says. Okay, so I can even talk about that as well. You know, it's typically people refer to knowledge in the world as knowing stuff. You know, like maybe some people have knowledge about cars, and some people have knowledge about science, and, you know, some people have knowledge about mathematics or engineering, right? maybe some people have knowledge about A Course in Miracles or Ramana Maharshi. But as you saw today in your tip in NTI, none of that is actually knowledge. That's not, you know, when A Course in Miracles or NTI or Ramana Maharshi use the word knowledge, they're not referring to knowing stuff. When the Tao Te Ching refers to knowledge, it's not referring to knowing stuff. Knowledge is knowing what you are. And it's interesting because one of the best descriptors for what we are is nothing, no thing, no object, right? Nothing. And if you've been practicing awareness, watching awareness, you might have a feel for what I mean by that. Because whenever we're practicing awareness, watching awareness, at least when I'm practicing awareness, watching awareness, I'll speak for myself, what the attention attempts to do is to land on something. You know, it wants to land on a thought, or it wants to land on a sensation, or maybe it wants to land on a sound. And so the effort in awareness, watching awareness meditation is to keep the attention in this space of nothing without having it land on a thing, right? And that space of nothing, for lack of better words, it's not really even a space. That awareness of the nothing that I am, that's awareness watching awareness, right? So if what I am is no thing, if what I am is nothing, what kind of knowledge can I have about that? You know, like, again, we can have knowledge about a car, or knowledge about science, or knowledge about mathematics. But what kind of knowledge can you have about nothing? What ends up happening, the knowing of yourself as nothing, is peace. That's kind of the effect. The knowing of yourself as nothing is peace. And so being at peace, regardless of what appears to be occurring in the world, that is kind of the outward sign of knowledge, right? The outward sign of true knowledge, of knowing what you are. This person is asking, what is the state of attainment of knowledge? And again, he's referring to this type of knowledge that I just described, the knowing yourself as nothing, not a thing, right? which is the same as the everything that Denise Hagen just sang about, because everything is that same nothing. The question is, what is the state of attainment of knowledge? All right, let's start looking at Ramana Maharshi's answer. It is firm and effortless. Firm and effortless. Abidance in the self. And I'm going to stop there. We'll look at the rest of the sentence in a moment. I'm just going to go ahead and look up the word firm. Just to see if there are any definitions there that aren't coming immediately to mind. All right, so unyielding. That would be the definition that applies here. Unyielding, right? No break in it. So when he says firm and effortless, he means unyielding. There is no break in it. It is not going to be swayed, right? It is not going to change. It is not going to yield. It is not going to pause. So it is firm, which we now know means unyielding, and effortless. Now, I talked to you just a moment ago that when I am in, when I'm practicing awareness, watching awareness meditation, the effort is really keeping the attention from landing on a thing, right? Keeping the attention from landing on thought, keeping the attention from landing on sensation, keeping the attention, keeping the awareness of awareness, of the no thing. So if I am using effort, which I am, you know, it's a continual practice. So if I am using effort, then I am not in this unyielding, effortless state. Right? So what Ramana Maharshi is talking about is someone who has transcended the practice of awareness, watching awareness, and has awakened into the natural awareness of awareness. Right? Unyielding awareness of awareness. Effortless awareness of awareness. Unyielding and effortless awareness of awareness. So again, what is the state of attainment of knowledge? It is firm and effortless abidance in the self. All right, here's the next part of the sentence that we really want to look at carefully. In which the mind, which has become one with the self, does not subsequently emerge again at any time. So a few weeks ago in the Guiding Light, one of the things that I did was I pulled out Bernadette Roberts' book, What is the Self? And we read about her experience of awakening from consciousness, from the second principle of God, to awareness, to the first principle of God. And what Bernadette Roberts talked about in this experience of awakening was, having awakened to consciousness, she had an experience of unity. She calls it unity consciousness. In fact, when Denise Hagen was singing, I Am Everything, that would be very much the experience of having awakened to the second principle of God, or as the Course in Miracles calls it, true perception, or the real world. But what she talks about, one of the hallmarks of this level of awakening, is what she calls ecstasy. Now, she was from a Catholic background. It's what Ramana Maharshi would call samadhi. And it's probably what Michael Langford would call awareness of awareness without being aware of anything else, right? But what would happen, she says, during the time that she was awake to consciousness, but not yet awake to the first principle of God, not yet awake to the absolute, what would happen during this period was she would go into ecstasy, or go into awareness of awareness, without any awareness of anything else. Without any awareness of thought, without any awareness of body, without any awareness of world, right? Awareness, being aware of awareness, and nothing else. And these experiences would occur, but as she spoke about them, you know, they always ended. They were temporary. So, you know, we don't know if they lasted hours or days. She doesn't really say, but she would go into these experiences of ecstasy, but they would always end. And she really sees them as a training, as a natural training that was occurring. in order to prepare one, both body and mind, in order to prepare one to go into ecstasy, into awareness, into the nothingness of awareness, and not return. Kind of a training ground. So during this period of time where she was going into awareness of awareness and everything else was disappearing, but then she would always return, that is not what Ramana Maharshi is calling knowledge. Because Ramana Maharshi is being very clear in his definition that it is firm and effortless abidance in the self. And hers was firm for the amount of time that the ecstasy lasted, and it was absolutely effortless. She wasn't practicing like I practice, right? It is firm and effortless abidance in the self, but this part of the sentence, in which the mind, which has become one with the self, does not subsequently emerge again at any time. And yet Kathy has it, the no return equals manonasa. And so what Bernadette Roberts talks about in her book was there came a time when she went into this, what she calls ecstasy, and there was a knowing that she was not coming back. And she does comment that there was a fear. There was a fear with the thought that she would not be coming back. But then the crossing over of the threshold occurred, from which there is no return. She awoke into the first principle of God. And that would be what Ramana Maharshi is calling knowledge, or manonasa, which means all of us on this side of the threshold even haven't awakened to consciousness, but still on this side of the threshold of no mind, qualify still as ignorant. And in fact, we saw a couple of weeks ago in the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi where someone asked Ramana Maharshi, you know, the question was it impure mind? Yeah, what is pure mind and what is impure mind? And Ramana Maharshi, when he was describing what is impure mind, he included consciousness. He included the second principle of God in impure mind. Only the first principle of God, only the absolute, only manonasa was considered pure mind. And, you know, I think these teachings are very important because I know up until I read Bernadette Roberts, which I believe started in November when I received the guidance to read Bernadette Roberts, even though I already knew about the first principle of God and the second principle of God at one level, I intuited that back in 2012. I did not realize that there is still what I'm going to call an ego. I'll explain more in just a moment. I did not realize that there was still an ego at the second principle of God, at the level of consciousness, until I read Bernadette Roberts' books. I did not realize that the final death of the ego, or manonasa, is awakening to the first principle of God only. I was under the misassumption, and maybe some of you have been too, that when you awaken to consciousness, like many of our teachers in the world have, you know, and they talk about how there's no person, right? That when you awaken to consciousness, at that point, you are already completely beyond ego. What I now understand from not only reading Bernadette Roberts, but Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, and Floyd Henderson. These are my four sources. I now understand that when you awaken to consciousness, you awaken beyond the personal ego, right? But there's what I'm going to call a larger sense of self, the I am everything sense of self that Denise Hagen was just singing about. The I am is what that is often called, the I am. So you awaken from the personal sense of self. So at that level, there is an ego death, the personal ego. But there's now what we would have to call collective. I am everything ego. It's still a sense of self. And this is why Ramana Maharshi calls consciousness impure. The way A Course in Miracles words it is it says that the real world is still a dream. Right? It's still not reality. And so that's why once we awaken to consciousness, and again, many of our teachers have awakened to consciousness. But that's why there's this second awakening from even the I am sense of self or the I am everything sense of self to no sense of self at all, which is the absolute, which is the first principle of God. And if you know the four principles of God, you know that the subject is born with the second principle of God. And because you have a subject, now you can have a creative principle can evolve and then an object can evolve, right? But the subject, yeah, consciousness of the subject is kind of born or evolved with consciousness. It's that subject. Maybe it's what the Course would call the dreamer of the dream, right? It's long before any personal ego, but that subject, when that ends, that sense of that I am everything subject, when that ends, that's the final death of the ego, that is manonessa, that is what Ramana Maharshi is referring to here as knowledge. So again, what is the state of attainment of knowledge? It is firm and effortless abidance in the self, in which the mind, which has become one with the self, does not subsequently emerge again at any time, right? It's like Bernadette Roberts talked about going into ecstasy and then never returning from that state that she calls ecstasy, right? Never coming back again. Hi, Jamie. I'm busy right now. You'll have to lay down or something, okay? Now Ramana Maharshi goes into what is, I think, his attempt to simplify what he just said. He says, that is, just as everyone usually and naturally has the idea, I am not a goat, nor a cow, nor any other animal, but a man, when he thinks of his body, right? So I'll just pause there for a moment. Now, of course, we don't actually think, at least I don't. I don't know about you guys. I don't walk around thinking I am not a goat. Right? I don't think that. But it's a natural knowledge. I don't have to think it. It's beyond thought. Right? I don't have to think I am not a goat. I am not a cow. I know it. Right? If we're looking at the level of body, it's just something we know, right? We don't even have to think about it. And I think that's really the point that he's making here, is knowledge. So that is, just as everyone usually and naturally has the idea, I am not a goat, nor a cow, nor any other animal, but a man, when he thinks of his body, comma, so also when he has the idea, I am not the principles beginning with the body and ending with the sound. And I'll be honest, I have no idea what that part of the sentence means. Often Ramana Maharshi is referring to Hindu teachings, because he's speaking to people that would have been raised with Hindu teachings. And I suspect this sentence is a Hindu teaching. So I'm just going to skip over it. I'm not going to bother gaining any more knowledge about it. I'm just going to skip over this phrase and go on to the next part. So that is, just as everyone usually and naturally has the idea, I am not a goat, nor a cow, nor any other animal but a man, when he thinks of his body, comma, so also when he has the idea, I am not the principles beginning with the body and ending with the sound, comma, but the self, which is existence, consciousness, and bliss. Okay, if we skip that middle phrase, which is probably some type of Hindu knowledge that we don't have, nor do we need to gain, and we just go with the first phrase in the sentence and that last phrase, then what he is saying is, just as everyone usually and naturally knows, right, you don't even have to think it, you know that you are a person, not an animal, right? He says, in knowledge, you know you are the self, right? You know, in the same way that you know now you're a person. So think about how innate that knowledge is that you're a person. Like, how often during the day do you confuse yourself with a goat? Never, right? Like, is it even possible for you to temporarily during the day think, oh, for just a minute there I thought I was a goat. I need to remind myself that I'm a human. Does that ever happen? No. So you know how easy it is to maintain the knowledge that you are a human. It is so easy, it's beyond any thought. It's beyond any effort of any type, right? You can't slip out of that and accidentally think you're a goat, right? So what he is saying is that knowledge is that same level of knowledge that you are the self. And by the way, when Ramana Maharshi uses the word the self, he's referring to the absolute, the first principle of God. Some teachers, when they use the word the self, they're referring to the second principle of God, consciousness. So it gets a little confusing when people use different words to talk about different things. You really have to look at a teacher very deeply to see what they mean by the self. You can't assume everybody is using that word in the same way. But when Ramana Maharshi says the self, he means the absolute, the first principle of God. So he is saying that you are so aware of yourself as the absolute that there's never a moment that you would confuse yourself with consciousness or person. Just like now, there's never a moment that you would confuse yourself with goat or cow, right? So, again, that's firm, unyielding, and effortless, right? Just like you are firm and effortless in your knowledge that you're a person, or you're in your apparent knowledge, in your ignorant knowledge, right? So just as everyone usually and naturally has the idea, I am not a goat, nor a cow, nor any other animal but a man, the self, which is existence, consciousness, and bliss, right? Is when you have that knowledge, because I skipped a sentence, so it gets a little weird there, but the self, which is existence, consciousness, and bliss, then he is said to have attained firm knowledge. Right? He is said to have attained firm knowledge. You know, often we hear two different stories. You know, we'll hear everybody is awakening. Awakening, you know, just lots of people are awakening. And we hear awakening is very rare. What I think is happening here, whenever I say I think, that means, you know, I can't be absolutely certain. But what I think is happening is here is when people are talking about how so many people are awakening, they're talking about awakening to consciousness. Awakening to the second principle of God, which Ramana Maharshi would not call awake at all. Right? He would not call that awake. He says that is still impure mind. It seems like an awakening when the personal ego ends, right? It's such a dramatic change from wrong perception to true perception, right? It's such a dramatic change. But awakening, or manonasa, as Michael Langford calls it, is awakening from the world entirely. It's what A Course in Miracles would call awakening to heaven. A Course in Miracles also uses the word knowledge. Buddha uses the word nirvana, right? Nirvana. So that's the true awakening. The awakening to consciousness, I think, is most definitely an awakening, but it's not the awakening. So that means that these many, many people who are awakening are certainly shifting to a dramatically different way of perceiving, but they have not awakened from perception entirely. And that, I suspect, is much more rare. And that is what Ramana Maharshi is calling knowledge. And I just want to say that I personally feel it's very, very good to have this clarity, that there is an awakening that is beyond what most people perceive as awake. You know, so that if we awaken to the unity stage, to the I am everything stage, to realize we're not done, I think it's really good information to have. And I mentioned that I have come to this conclusion through Bernadette Roberts, Floyd Henderson, Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj. But I want to say, going back and looking at A Course in Miracles from this perspective, it's clear that's what the Course has always been saying. You know, this is no different than what A Course in Miracles has always taught. Because again, there's true perception, which is still a dream, the real world, which is still a dream, and then awakening to heaven or knowledge, which is beyond the dream entirely, right? Okay, so the next question I don't think we really care about. I'll read it to you, but again, it's getting into Hindu knowledge that I don't plan to acquire. The next question is simply, to which of the seven stages of knowledge does the sage belong? And Ramana Maharshi answers, he belongs to the fourth stage. Question number three, if that is so, why have three more stages superior to it been distinguished? And Ramana Maharshi says, the marks of the stages 4 to 7 are based upon the experiences of the realized person. They are not states of knowledge and release. So far as knowledge and release are concerned, no distinction whatever is made in these four stages. And again, without knowing what these seven stages are, I can't begin to understand this answer other than to say that, you know, Ramana Maharshi seems to be saying that whatever this fourth stage is, that is full awakening. And those other stages are not additional awakening other than that. But, you know, I really don't even care. Like, it doesn't matter to me. I'm not here to learn all of these different things that come from the Upanishads. So I'm going to move on to question number four. As liberation is common to all, why is the most excellent alone praised excessively? And the Hindu word for the most excellent is Varishta. Oh, Jay's writing in the seven stages for us here. Varishta is so. The reason I'm telling you that is because Ramana Maharshi is going to refer to Varishta in his answer. Yeah, so I'm just going to read these seven stages for the recording since Jay has typed them in. The first stage is good desire. The second stage is pondering and reflecting. The third stage is thinning out the mind. The fourth stage is the owner of purity, which again, Ramana Maharshi equates purity to the absolute. The fifth stage is unlimited power. The sixth stage is seeing truth beyond the mind. And the seventh stage, he says, is the stage before liberation. But Ramana Maharshi seemed to say that the stage is at stage four and the other three stages are not additional awakening. So I don't know. I don't know what to say about all that, but I do want to emphasize that I don't care. I'll tell you why I want to emphasize that I don't care. Because one of the things I have learned about the ego is the ego wants to understand everything. And the ego will just ask question after question after question, wanting to understand everything. And that is actually a form of resistance to the truth. What I have learned is that there certainly seems to be a certain amount of knowledge that we each need to acquire in order to generate within us the desire and the willingness to apply ourselves to the practices that actually awaken, you know, such as inquiring into our thoughts, letting go of the thinking that we see as impure thinking, practicing awareness, watching awareness meditation. There seems to be a certain amount of knowledge that we need to gain first in order to motivate us to practice. But we don't need any more knowledge than that. Once we're motivated to practice, it's practice. That's what we need, right? So when I read these things, you know, once upon a time, I would have been worried, actually. I would have been worried. Well, what does this mean, you know? Unlimited power, seeing truth beyond the mind, and stage before liberation. When Ramana Maharshi says the sage is at four and, you know, that's all there is to it. You know, what does this mean? I would have been worried about all of that. And now I just don't care. I just don't care. I have no desire to gain any knowledge I do not need. So that's why I'm going over these things pretty quickly. I mean, obviously the person he was talking to already had this education and these answers were burning in him, and Raman is trying to help him. But a person can sit and ask question after question after question after question and without realizing that they're staying in the mind and resisting the practice that actually leads to the liberation. Okay, so the question, however, we'll still look at these questioners' questions. He says, as liberation is common to all, because Ramana Maharshi just said that the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh stage are liberation already, right? So the questioner is asking, as liberation is common to all, why is the most excellent alone praised excessively, which I would assume is the highest stage, the most excellent alone. Again, the Hindu word for that is Varishta. And so Ramana Maharshi says, so far as the Varishta's common experience of bliss is concerned, he is extolled only because of the special merit acquired by him in his previous births, which is the cause of it. Now, you know, we're going to keep looking at these questions, but I'll tell you a feeling that I get sometimes when I'm reading Ramana Maharshi. Sometimes I get the feeling he's just playing along. Like the answers that he's giving right now aren't his real answers. If someone came to him who was not concerned at all about these stages. The mind was not asking questions at all about these stages. Ramana Maharshi would never, ever, ever mention these stages. Like, this is not a part of his teaching. You know, he doesn't care any more than I do. He's just playing along. And when he starts just playing along like that, his answers often get very short, like this, like the last couple of answers have been. You know, then because he's not really providing any true information. So, and I really feel strongly that's what's happening here. Like, this stuff isn't truly meaningful. Number five, as there is no one who does not desire to experience constant bliss, what is the reason why all sages do not attain the state of Varishta? Ramana Maharshi says, it is not to be attained by mere desire or effort. Karma is its cause. As the ego dies, along with its cause, even in the fourth stage, what agent is there beyond that stage to desire anything or make any efforts? So long as they make efforts, they will not be sages. Do the sacred texts, which specially mention the Varishta, say that the other three are unenlightened persons? And this person is going to answer that in a moment, and that conversation is going to continue. But I do see something that I think is very important to us here in this particular answer. And so I want to pause and look at that. Ramana Maharshi is pointing out that once awakening has occurred, once the ego is dead, beyond the final death of the ego, he says, what agent is there beyond that stage to desire anything or to make efforts? I remember I was reading a spiritual teaching once, and this was many years ago, probably in around 2007 or 2008 at the latest. And there was some good stuff in this particular book. And it was supposedly a channeled book. Right? That voice of Jesus. And I remember I came to one part in the book where, you know, the channeled voice of Jesus made a statement that, you know, once awakening happens or once enlightenment happens, after that, you, speaking to the scribe and the reader, will be able to do anything you want to do. Whether that's smoke cigarettes and drink alcohol, no matter which way you tend to go, either one, you'll be able to do anything you want to do. And I remember in that moment thinking, this isn't truth. This isn't truth, because somehow I already knew that awakening is the end of the self. There's no self. Who would want to smoke a cigarette or drink carrot juice? Who would want that? If I had a preference, if there was a me to have a preference between the cigarette and carrot juice, that means awakening has not occurred. And so I knew from that point that this book that I was reading was not completely pure. And I started reading with a lot more careful eye after that point forward. Now, at the same time, you know, when we read I Am That by Nisargadatta Maharaj, we all know that Nisargadatta is smoking a cigarette. Because he's explaining how there is no world, and he is not in a world, right? And the questioner says something, but I see you sitting there smoking a cigarette. In fact, before that, he says to Nisargadatta, he says, are you trying to tell me that that you are not conscious of having a body? And Nisargadatta says something like, to the contrary, I am conscious of not having a body. And let me remind you of the discussion we had just a little bit ago, right? You are conscious of not being a goat, right? Like you are fully conscious that you are not a goat, right? Well, remember Ramana Maharshi said knowledge is when it's that same natural knowledge that you're the self. And that's what Nisargadatta was expressing. He says, I am conscious of not having a body. Right? He was in that unyielding, effortless abidance. And then the next thing that happens is the man says, but I see you sitting there smoking a cigarette. And it could have been, but I see you sitting there drinking carrot juice if it was someone else. But what Ramana Maharshi is explaining in this answer is that this is not, you know, this is not a person smoking a cigarette or a person drinking carrot juice. This is what we often call here interdependent co-arising, or the creative principle. Ramana Maharshi is calling it karma. We also sometimes call it script. Moving the body to smoke a cigarette or moving the body to drink carrot juice. You know, as the code explains, right, the code is written through all of us. So in effect, and the flow explains this too, so in effect, through everything that is happening in the world, a creation is happening. Through everything that is happening in the world, a creation is happening. Everything makes everything. And a part of what is happening in that creation is this particular body that we call Nisargadatta Maharaj is smoking a cigarette. The body is smoking a cigarette. But there is not a person there making that choice, having that desire, or having that addiction. And the same would be true if it was carrot juice. So the idea that when I awaken, I can do whatever I want, is misinformation. The body will be moved and the body will do things, no doubt about it. But there's not an I driving that body. So this is what Ramana Maharshi is saying in this particular answer. Again, the guy is talking about these seven stages and he's expressing confusion about the seven stages because Ramana gave him an answer which goes against what he was taught, right? Ramana is saying that the liberation occurs at the fourth stage, when we can tell by what Jay has written here that that doesn't seem to be the case, because he has stage seven, the stage before liberation. So this guy's like, what? You know, so he's asking all these questions. And this top stage, whatever it is, the barista, right? He's like, well, why does everybody say that's it? You know, if you wake at four, why is everybody always saying barista is it? And again, the question is, as there is no one who does not desire to experience constant bliss. In other words, we all want to experience constant bliss. Yeah. So as there is no one who does not desire to experience constant bliss, what is the reason why all sages do not attain the state of varishta? So why are some teachers just at four? I'm sure this is just what he's learned. If we all, you know, were raised with Hindu Upanishad knowledge, this would probably be common knowledge for us too. He's probably learned that some stages awaken to level four, some to level five, some to level six, some to level seven. And he's saying, how come they don't all go all the way? I mean, we all want constant bliss. Why would we stop before then, right? That's basically his question. And Ramana Maharshi answers, it is not to be attained by mere desire or effort. Karma is the cause. Okay? And again, he's just, in a way, he's just entertaining this guy. But listen to this part of the answer. This is what's important for us. as the ego dies, along with its cause, that would be the driver, as the ego dies along with its cause, even in the fourth stage, what agent is there beyond that stage to desire anything or to make efforts? So long as they make efforts, they will not be sages. And then he goes on to say, do the sacred texts, which specially mention the Varishta, say that the other three are unenlightened persons? Again, what's important for us to know is the death of the ego is the death of the self. And again, I'm gonna say that there are two levels of that that seems to occur. There's the death of the personal self, which is the awakening to the I am. The I am everything subject. And there's the death of that, which is the awakening to the nothingness, the absolute, the truth. And the reason this is important for us to know, because again, I said a moment ago, you know, we're not here just to gain all of this knowledge. So someone might say, well, why do I need to know that? Maybe you don't need to know that. Why would I care to know that? Why does Regina care when she doesn't care about these seven stages? Why does she care about this teaching point? The answer to the question is, because again, based on teachers that I trust, you know, like, you know, Dr. David Hawkins, for example, you all have seen his videos about the final doorway. There is an experience that we come to, which is the experience of the death of self. And if we have really got a strong foundation, even at the level of mind, that this is what awakening is, will be more prepared to let it complete itself. If we have in the mind that awakening is somehow awakening to a super me who is now a happy me, a free me, and can do anything I want, we're likely to turn around, to stop, when that sense of death of self comes. We need to know that this is a perfectly natural experience when awakening. We need to know, and although there's none of us can guess what's beyond the self, we need to know that this is what awakening is so that we can have enough trust to allow the awakening process to complete itself without turning around and ending that process. So that's why I think it's important that we have clarity on this, that there will be no me, not even a me as consciousness, an I am me, when we awaken to the absolute. We are awakening beyond the sense of self entirely. And with that, I will release the mic. Good night, everyone.